But reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 4, Verses 1 to 23, The Incarnations of Godhead. Verse 1. Shri Raja Vacha Yani Yani Hakamani Yai Yai Swachanda Jamavi Chakri Karo Tikartava Haristani Bravantuna. King Nimi said, Supreme Personality of Godhead descends into the material world by His internal potency and according to His own desire. Therefore, please tell us about the various pastimes Lord Hari has performed in the past, is performing now, and will perform in this world in the future in His various incarnations. Mukamakarkivachalam Bangamangayate Girim Yakipantamaham Bande Shigurum Jigacharanam Om Gyana Chimarandasya Gyananjala Shalakaya Chakshuramitam Yena Tasamai Shri Gurave Namaha. What do you remember from last class? Of the question was karma, akarma, vikarma. Please describe this. Nimi is asking about karma. Different types of karma. Nishuka?
I remember that in the beginning, the Vedas are presenting furtive activities, and
right.
It's like a candy.
Like candy.
To attract the. Yeah, to attract persons to come to devotional service.
Right. What is that called in Sanskrit when they conceal the real meaning?
Parokshavada.
Yes, parokshavada. The Vedas, they are not telling what the real purpose is, they're concealing it, but they're giving something else. Oh yes, this candy is the thing, you should do this sacrifice and get this candy. Yes. Anything else? Yes? Right. Karma yoga has to be performed under the direction of the spiritual master. Not anything you do, you can say, oh, this is karma yoga. Okay? Yes?
This was for less intelligent people, and for more intelligent, we have archana.
Yes, for less intelligent people, they do these rituals. For more intelligent, we have archana, where you directly please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? Anything else? Yes?
And we should worship that form of the deity to which we are most attracted.
Yes. We should worship the deity to which we are most attracted. Yes?
After worshipping the deity, you should also worship the Lord in sun, light, brahmanas, water, vaishnavas, air, fire, cow,
okay. Etc. After worshipping the deity, we should worship the Lord in the brahmanas, the vaishnavas, the air, water, all the elements. We should worship the Lord. Yes? The spiritual master takes his daily bath in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, Krishna's his fragrance, right, right. Okay, anything else? Remember. Can you hear us, Parvati, out there?
Yeah, very good.
Good, okay, fine. And you're away from the fragrance of the... yes.
Before worshipping the deity, one performs Bhuta Shuddhi.
Bhuta Shuddhi, before
material... conception of the self, then pranayama.
Pranayama, Buddha Shuddhi, and yasa. Okay, good. So now they talked to the last verse was about worshipping, well, deity worship and then worshipping the Lord. So now we'll hear about the different forms of the Lord. The first one, how the Lord descends according to his own desire. End of the purport says, Abhimata Murti means that among the eternal forms of the Lord, one should select that form which most inspires one's love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such love cannot be imitated, but it is automatically aroused When one follows the prescribed rules and regulations given by the bona fide spiritual master and submissively hears these descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam. So there is a verse we learnt in the third canto, 3.9.11, similar. Tam bhakti yoga paripavita hit saroja ase shtech tapato nananata pungsam yad yatya cha urugaya vibhavayanti tattava pupanaya se saranugrahaya. Oh my lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. And so in this purport, Prabhupada says something very interesting, that when they say the Lord manifests before the devotee in the form devotees like to worship, it means the Lord is subordinate to the desire of his devotee. So according to how the devotee desires to see the Lord, that's how the Lord comes. So Prabhupada said, this demand of the devotee is satisfied by the Lord because he's pliable in terms of loving service of the devotee. And then he quotes, yaya tamam prapadyante, tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. But we should note, however, the Lord is not the order supplier. He comes according to our desire, but not that we can demand, okay, you become my, you give me this, you give me that. I want to see you in that form, as the Christians say, Santa Claus. Now it is Christmas time. And so they're thinking, when they think of celebrating the appearance of Christ, and people are thinking of getting the children are thinking, we will get some presents, we will get some gifts. And the parents are thinking of, they have to buy all the gifts. But no, we want, it's not like we demand, but actually we have that desire and he reciprocates with us. So Prabhupada said this is prema actually. This indicates tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita, efficiency achieved through execution of a mature devotional service or prema. And this we achieve by our gradual process of development from shada to prema. And the path is shutekshita, the path of hearing. And so Prabhupada said also that the attachment of a devotee to a particular form is due to natural inclination. We all have our relationship with Krishna. So he says, in each and every living entity is originally attached to a particular type of service because he's eternally the servant. And so we understand by chanting Hare Krishna, then all the material contamination is removed and we can see what is our relationship with Krishna. So verse 2, the answer by Sri Jumila. Anyone trying to enumerate or describe fully the unlimited qualities of the unlimited Supreme Lord has the intelligence of a foolish child. Even if a great genius could somehow or other, after a time-consuming endeavor, count all the particles of dust on the surface of the earth, such a genius could never count the attractive qualities of the personality of Godhead, who is a reservoir of all potencies. So, very similar verse, prayers of Lord Brahma, that in time the philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms. This is 10:14:7. Or particles of snow, or the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But who can possibly count the qualities of the Supreme Lord? So this is a wonderful purport where Sanatan Goswami says that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. So for each one of us, Krishna manifests a quality that will attract us to him. Something about Krishna will attract each one of us individually, different qualities. Since there are innumerable living entities in the material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. So each one of us, we have a specific quality that Krishna will manifest that will attract us to him. Thus, every conditioned soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. And also Vishnu Chakravarti says that Sankarshan has actually counted the number of atoms on the earth and the number of molecules in the sun, but still he couldn't count the qualities of Krishna. Even though he's chanting with his thousands of mouths since the beginning of time, he still hasn't been able to count all the qualities of Krishna. So just try to imagine that. Verse 3, when the primeval Lord Narayan created his universal body out of the five elements produced from himself and then entered within that universal body by his own plenary portion, he thus became known as the Purusha. So here in the purport, about four lines down, although Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purushottama, enjoys his pure transcendental existence in the spiritual sky, the material elements are also meant for his enjoyment through the process of yajna or sacrifice. So this world is Devi Dham, the abode of Maya Devi. And Brahma Samhita explains he's not attracted to Maya, but when it's used in his service, he's attracted by the devotion and sacrifice of the living entities. And then interesting next paragraph. We should not think the pastimes of Lord Narayana, super soul and creator of the universe, are on a lower spiritual level than Narayana's eternal pastimes in the spiritual world. Were Lord Narayan in any way to diminish his transcendental bliss and knowledge in his activities of material creation, he would have to be considered a conditioned soul affected by contact with the illusory potency. So he's making the point the super soul's activities are on the same transcendental level as his activities in the spiritual world. Why is that? Because even though it seems like he's reciprocating with us through this material energy, the reciprocation brings us closer to him. Whereas if you are just getting your karma, people who are just getting karma, then they're forgetting. They're under that direction of the super soul to forget. But for the devotees, karmani nirdahati kintu chabhakti bhajam. The devotees, they are not under karma. The super soul, it is his activities of the spiritual world because he's bringing us closer to him. As Gita says, te sham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Dadami bhuti yogam tam. He gives us intelligence. So his activities are wonderful in our relationship with him in this world. And the Brihadbhagavatamrita describes this Mahapurusha that he's living on Brahma's planet. He's a guest. And they're constantly, 24 hours, they're offering sacrifices to him. And so everybody's very happy up there. It tells a little bit about Brahma Loka, that Brahma, in meditation, he saw him, and then he gave him an invitation, please come and live on my planet with me. And so then the Lord became Brahma's constant guest. And it's described that they're making offerings constantly, just like a flowing river. So there's always so many sacrifices on Brahma's planet. And that's why everybody there is very happy, because the Lord is always, they're always doing sacrifices, and the Lord is personally there, and he's eating, and they're seeing him. But then, somebody asked a question. Yeah, I think it was this Prabhuji here. I don't know his name. From Brihadbhagavatamrita, it says, it is true, Lord Mahapurush is sometimes absent when he merges into Shri Krishna to join him in Mathura Dham on earth. And the ecstasy on Brahmaloka is interrupted. So he does come down here when Krishna comes. All the incarnations go. Here it says this in Brihadbhagavatamrita 1.2.34. Time on Brahmaloka is so expansive, the duration of Krishna's descent is barely noticeable. In effect, on Brahmaloka, Lord Mahapurusha is seen constantly. So just imagine, so Krishna was here 125 years. So how much is that in Lord Brahma's time? Half a second? Not even. Well, maybe half a second. 1 second? 125 years in Brahma's time. We need some kind of computer to figure that out. Anyway, so they don't miss him so much. But if you happen to come in that 1 second when he's not there, then you might miss him. So verse 4, within his body are elaborately arranged the three planetary systems of this universe. His transcendental senses generate the knowledge-acquiring and active senses of all embodied beings. His consciousness generates conditioned knowledge, and his powerful breathing produces the bodily strength, sensory power, and conditioned activities of the embodied souls. He is the prime mover through the agency of the material modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And thus, the universe is created, maintained, and annihilated. We go to paragraph 2. This verse describes Garbhodakshaya Vishnu's second phase of Purusha incarnations. This Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, glorified in Purusha Shukta prayers, expands himself as super soul to enter the heart of every living being. Through chanting holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, even in this degraded age, one can find the Supreme Lord within one's heart. The Lord is a person as much as we are, but he is unlimited. Still, a personal loving relationship exists between the tiny living entity and the unlimited Supreme Lord. Consideration of this personal relationship, bhakti yoga, is the only suitable process by which to come to the ultimate understanding of our constitutional position as eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. So verse 5, we're in the Purusha incarnations. In the beginning, the original Supreme Personality manifested the form of Brahma through the material mode of passion in order to create this universe. The Lord manifested his form as Vishnu, Lord of Sacrifice, and protector of the twice-born Brahmanas in their religious duties to maintain the universe. And when the universe is to be annihilated, the same Supreme Lord employs material mode of ignorance and manifests the form of Rudra. The created living beings are thus always subject to the forces of creation, maintenance, and destruction. So there is a, so now it's the Guna avatars. So Purusha avatars, now Guna avatars. And there's a verse 2739 where it is said, at the beginning of creation there are penance, myself, Brahma, and the Prajapatis, the great sages who generate. So at the beginning you need passion. So Brahma, the Prajapatis, the great sages, they all need to have children and populate the universe. And penance, that's in the beginning. During maintenance, there's Lord Vishnu, the demigods with controlling powers, and the kings of different planets. So for maintenance, you need the demigods, and you need the kings, and Vishnu. At the end, there is irreligion, Lord Shiva, and the atheists, full of anger. All of them are different representative manifestations of the energy of the Supreme Lord. So we have, these are the different modes, and they all have a purpose in creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the universe. Now we get to our story. Narayana Rishi, who is perfectly peaceful and is the best of sages, was born as a son of Dharma and his wife Murti, the daughter of Daksha. Narayana Rishi taught the devotional service of the Lord by which material work ceases, and he himself perfectly practiced this knowledge. He is living even today. His lotus feet served by the greatest of saintly persons. So this is our present. He asked about past, so we heard about the Purusha and Guna. Of course, Guna is also present. They're all present at incarnation. Narayana Rishi, though, is presently on this earth, up in Bhadarikasha. It is understood, purport, that Narayana Rishi spoke transcendental knowledge to great saintly persons such as Narada Muni. On the basis of these teachings, Narada was able to describe Naishkarmyam, or devotional service of the Lord, which eradicates material work, as mentioned in Bhagavatam 1.3.8. Tantram sattamachasta naishkarmyam karmanam yata. So there also, Naishkarmyam means devotional service. The Atma Sarup, or eternal form of the living entity, is devotional service to the personality of Godhead. But our perception of our eternal form is covered by material concept of life, just as our normal understanding of our life is covered by a dream. So that's the illusion. The illusion is our material concept of life. Naishkarmyam, or cessation of material work, is possible only by devotional service of the Lord, as stated by Narada Muni himself. So if you hear the word Naishkarmya referring to anything else, then it cannot be real Naishkarmya. Even here it's described, he quotes 1.5.12. Naishkarmyam apachutta bhava varchitam naishopate jnanam alam niranjanam. So the process of transforming ordinary karma into Naishkarma is summarized by Prabhupada in his commentary on this verse. Fruit of work, in which almost all people in general are engaged, is always painful, either in beginning or at the end. It can be fruitful only when made subservient to devotional service of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed the result of such fruit of work may be offered for the service of the Lord, otherwise it leads to material bondage. Bona fide enjoyer fruit of work is the personality of Godhead, and thus, when it is engaged for sense gratification of the living beings, it becomes an acute source of trouble. Yes, there's a verse from the Puranas, Hladatapa Karimishra, that when you try to enjoy the Hladini Shakti in this world, it's mixed with tapa. Hladatapa Karimishra. When you try to enjoy Radharani or Lakshmi or Sita or the illusory energy, the Lord's opulence, then you will certainly get tapa mixed with it, tapa kari mishra. Verse 7, King Indra became fearful, thinking Narayana Rishi would become very powerful by his severe penances and cease Indra's heavenly kingdom. Thus Indra, not knowing the transcendental glories of the incarnation of the Lord, sent Cupid and his associates to the Lord's residence in Bhadrikasham. As the charming breezes of spring created a most sensuous atmosphere, Cupid himself attacked the Lord with arrows in the form of the irresistible glances of beautiful women. So we've heard this scene described many times in Bhagavatam, and many times they fall for it, actually. Purava, different people, they actually go for it. But here it's different. Purport. This verse and the following nine verses illustrate personality of Godhead's opulence of supreme renunciation. The word atanmahigya, not understanding the glories of the Lord, indicates King Indra was placing personality of Godhead on the same level as he himself, considering the Lord an ordinary enjoyer who would be attracted by mundane sex life. Indra's plot to cause the downfall of Narayana Rishi could not affect the Lord, but it reveals the short-sightedness of Indra himself. Because Indra is attached to his heavenly kingdom. He took it for granted the Supreme Lord was performing austerities to acquire such flickering phantasmagoria as the kingdom of heaven. Chidashpur akasha push payate. So, atmavan manyate jagat. I like to enjoy, therefore he must also want to enjoy and take away my enjoyment from me. He must be doing austerities just to take away my heavenly kingdom. So he'll become more powerful than me, so I have to stop him. The primeval Lord, understanding the offense committed by Indra, did not become proud. Instead, he spoke laughingly as follows to Cupid and his followers, who were trembling before him. Do not fear, O mighty Madan, O wind god, and wives of the demigods. Rather, please accept these gifts I'm offering you and kindly sanctify my ashram by your presence. It's so quite different from what Indra was thinking, and they're completely worried that they're going to get cursed. Like Lord Shiva, last time Cupid came in front of Lord Shiva, he got burned up. Lord Shiva got angry. He tried to allure Lord Shiva and agitate Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva burnt him with his glance. So he was expecting, we blew it, now we're finished. But he said, no, don't worry. Please be my guest at my ashram. What a different result. The word gada vismaya, free from false pride, is very significant. If one becomes proud by performing severe penances, such penances are considered material. So even if you do some chaturmasya vrat or something, if you think, I have done it, I have done this kartik vrat, just see, then you lose it. I've heard, Shimari has told me that if you take a vrat of chanting 64 rounds and then you tell somebody, then you lose. Then the person you tell gets the result. they get the result of your vrat. You tell somebody, I'm chanting 64, then they will get it, and not you. It's good. You should ask everybody, what vrat are you doing? Then if they tell you, no, that's cheating. You shouldn't do that. You don't have to do any vrat. You just get everyone's results. No, it's not a Vaishnava thing to do. Okay. Sri Narayan could immediately understand the foolishness of Indra, and thus he was amused by the whole situation. Cupid and the heavenly women, understanding the great offense, were trembling before Narayan in fear of receiving a powerful curse. But the Lord, exhibiting most sublime saintly behavior, reassured them, saying, Mabai, don't worry about it. and actually offer them nice prasadam and articles of worship. If you do not give me the opportunity to act as host to the demigods and other respectable personalities, he said, what will be the use of my ashram? My ashram will be void without the opportunity to receive respectable personalities such as you. So this is very reminiscent of the story of Bhrigu approaching Vishnu and he putting his foot on his chest and he said, I hope my chest didn't hurt your soft foot. So it's like that. They're committing offense, but he's making it like it's his offense. Like, oh, I will be the offender if you do not come to my ashram. Similarly, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, establishing beautiful centers in all the major cities of the world. In some of these centers, like Los Angeles, Bombay, London, Paris, and Melbourne, societies establish very gorgeous preaching ashrams. But the Vaishnavas who live in these beautiful buildings feel the buildings are void if guests do not come to hear about Krishna and chant his holy name. Thus one may establish a beautiful ashram, not for one's personal sense gratification, but to execute Krishna consciousness peacefully and encourage others to take to Krishna consciousness also. Prabhupada, when he was in Mayapur, he was building these big, first he built a guest house before the temple because he wanted people to live. He says, if I just sit under a tree here in Mayapur, nobody is going to come and see me. He said, so now I'm building these guest houses, but you should not think these guest houses belong to you. This room belongs to you. It is for preaching. It is for the people to come and be attracted. So verse 9, my dear King Nimi, when Narayana Rishi thus spoke, eradicating the fear of the demigods, they bowed their heads with shame and addressed the Lord as follows to invoke his compassion. Our dear Lord, you are always transcendental, beyond the reach of illusion. Therefore, you are forever changeless. Your causes compassion toward us, despite our great offense, is not at all unusual in you, since innumerable great sages who are self-satisfied and free from anger and false pride bow down humbly at your lotus feet. Purport. The demigods said, our dear Lord, although ordinary living entities such as the demigods and ordinary men are always disturbed by material pride and anger, you are always transcendental. Therefore, it is not surprising that we fallible demigods could not appreciate your glories. Now here's a very interesting verse 10. Very nice verse, a nice purport. The demigods place many obstacles on the path of those who worship you to transcend the temporary abodes of the demigods and reach your supreme abode. So that's us. They are placing obstacles on our path. Those who offer the demigods their assigned shares in sacrificial performances encounter no obstacles. So if they worship us, the demigods say, they won't have any problems. But then they say the last sentence. But because you are the direct protector of your devotee, he is able to step over the head of whatever obstacle the demigods place before him. So the obstacles may come, but Krishna will protect us and help us if we surrender. Purport, go about six lines down. Although a Vaishnava, or devotee of the Lord, has no need to worship the demigods being proud of their exalted material position sometimes resent the exclusive devotion of the Vaishnava to the Lord, thus try to cause the devotee to fall down. It's described in this verse, Surakrita Bhavon Taraya. So that later on, I believe it's in Uddhava Gita, it will say that sometimes somebody will take sannyas and the demigods will come in the form of the wife of the sannyasi or as other beautiful young women to make the sannyasi fall down. It says that in one of later on, I believe, it will say that the demigods come in these forms to try to make the devotee fall down. But the demigods here point out that Krishna is directly the protector of his devotees. Therefore, so-called impediments become stimuli for further spiritual advancement for a sincere devotee. Obstacles become stimuli for further advancement. The demigods here state, we thought, our dear Lord, that we could disturb your consciousness by our foolish tricks. But by your mercy, even your devotees pay little regard to us. So why should you take our foolish behavior seriously? The word yadi here is used to indicate the certainty. Krishna is always the protector of his surrendered devotees. Okay, now here's a very nice sentence. Next two sentences. Although there may be many obstacles on the path of the sincere devotee who is preaching the glories of the Lord, such obstacles increase the determination of the devotee. So obstacle may come, and his determination increases. Next sentence. Therefore, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, the continuous obstacles presented by the demigods form a kind of ladder or stairway upon which the devotee steadily progresses back to the kingdom of God. So next time you get an obstacle, just understand it's another rung on the ladder back to Godhead. So that's how we have to see it. Here's another rung in the ladder, another obstacle, another rung in the ladder. Okay, now I can climb up, I can get closer. I'm going back to Godhead. Another obstacle, another rung in the ladder, back to Godhead. So here, there's a verse 10:2-33. Tata nate madhava tavaka kachit prashyanti margattai bhatta savira tayabhi gupta vicharanti nirpaya vinayakani kapamurta suprabho. O Madhava, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. This is sometimes you see a devotee fall down. But we should not judge them. Gita also says that. Apichet saracharo. Bhagavatam also says that. Don't judge. And so this is a very important thing for us to realize. If we judge, we may also fall. But the devotees don't fall like non-devotees. They're still protected by Krishna. And they will progress in devotional service. So Vishnu Chakravarti comments, what to speak of you? Even your devotees don't care for us by your mercy. We've created so many obstacles for them. Why do they create obstacles? Vishnu asks, why do they create obstacles? Because devotees go past Swarga and go to Vaikuntha. They're going higher than the demigods, so the demigods don't like that. That means the demigods are envious of the devotees. Otherwise, performers of karma don't have obstacles, because they're giving their share of sacrifice to Indra. So, will my devotees fall because of your obstacles? No, because you're the Lord of the Devatas, protector of the devotee. Devotee puts his foot on the head of obstacles. So we'll hear a verse like that tomorrow in chapter 5 also. So this verse is quoted in Chaitanya Bhagava, also another one, from 3:22-37. How can persons completely under the shelter of Lord Krishna in devotional service be put into miseries pertaining to body, mind, nature, and other men and living creatures? One who has realized Madhusudana in his heart cannot be killed by the curse of Durvasa or thunderbolt of Indra. The Naradiya Purana quotes, neither a king, a thief, nor disease can create obstacles for one engaged in worshipping Lord Vishnu. A person engaged in worship of Achyuta cannot be checked by ghosts, witches, evil spirits, planets, sorcerers, or other demons. So that's Chaitanya Bhagavat Adikanda 8:87. So verse 11, there's another. Now here's the problem with people who don't do devotional service. They have one problem here. Some men, this is the yogis, practice severe penances to cross beyond our influence, which is like an immeasurable ocean with endless waves of hunger, thirst, heat, cold, and the other conditions brought about by the passing of time, such as the sensuous wind and the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Nevertheless, although crossing this ocean of sense gratification through severe penances, such persons foolishly drown in a cow's hoofprint when conquered by useless anger. Thus, they exhaust the benefit of their difficult austerities in vain. So the problem of the yogis is anger. They do all these austerities, but their heart becomes hard. They don't get soft. They don't have melted hearts. They don't have soft hearts. And so then, just a little thing will make them angry. So this is the problem. If these demigods and Cupid had gone to a yogi, then the yogi would certainly have cursed, drowned in a cow's hoofprint, cursed him, because when they curse, they lose all their mystic austerities. So, here the purport says, those who do not accept devotional service of the Supreme Lord can be considered in two categories. So two people don't engage. Those engaged in sense gratification are easily conquered by demigods through various weapons like hunger, thirst, sexual desire, lamentation for the past, and vain hoping for the future. Such materialistic fools infatuated with material world are easily controlled by demigods, who are the ultimate supplying agents of sense gratification. But, according to Shirasami, persons who attempt to subdue desires of material senses and avoid control of the demigods without surrendering to the Supreme Lord are even more foolish than the sense gratifiers. So these yogis and genies are more foolish. Now here's the sentence. Although crossing the ocean of sense gratification, those who perform severe penances without service to the Lord eventually drown in tiny puddles of anger. So this is the problem with people who do severe penances without Krishna consciousness. One who simply performs material penance does not actually purify his heart. So this is the problem. The result is krodha, or anger. And he says he's seen people like this who became very bitter and angry through denial of the senses. And they don't get liberation, nor can they enjoy, but they just become angry, cursing others or enjoying false pride, exhaust the results of their painful austerities. Here it says, when a yogi curses, he diminishes the mystic power he has accumulated. Yes. So anger gives neither liberation nor sense gratification, but burns up all the results of material penance and austerities. So they cross the huge ocean of sense gratification and drown in the puddle of anger. What's the use of all the penances and austerities? And then finished. So Vishnu says, just as a person who is drowning and out of control gives up a treasure he has placed on his head. So imagine, here's the yogis, they're getting across the ocean, but then the treasure is on his head. But then when they curse, they throw the treasure away. They lose it, all the treasure. 12. While the demigods were thus praising the Supreme Lord, the all-powerful Lord suddenly manifested before their eyes many women who are astonishingly gorgeous, decorated with fine clothes and ornaments, and all faithfully engaged in the Lord's service. So here's, instead of anger, he just showed him, Lord Narayan showed him what, you know, his opulence. I mean, why should I be attracted to these women? Look who are serving me, and I'm not attracted. Lord Narayan showed his causeless mercy toward the demigods by relieving them of their false prestige. Although the demigods were proud of their personal beauty and female companions, the Lord showed he was already being adequately served by innumerable gorgeous females, each of whom was far more beautiful than any female companion imagined by the demigods. The Lord manifested such uniquely attractive women through his own mystic potency. When the followers of the demigods gazed upon the fascinating mystic beauty of the women created by Narayana Rishi and smelled the fragrance of their bodies, the minds of these followers became bewildered. So they came to bewilder him, and they got bewildered instead. Indeed, upon seeing the beauty and magnificence of such women, representatives of the demigods were completely diminished in their own opulence. So not only were they bewildered, they were ashamed. Supreme Lord of Lords then smiled slightly and told the representatives of heaven who were bowing down before him, please choose one of these women, whomever you find suitable for you. She will become the ornament of the heavenly planets. So he's joking. He's joking with them. But in the purport it says he was almost laughing upon seeing the defeat of the demigods. However, being extremely grave, he did not actually laugh. Although the demigods might have thought, we are simply low-class fools in comparison to these women, the Lord encouraged them to choose one of the women, whomever they considered equal in character to themselves. The beauty thus selected would become the ornament of heaven. And so they gave them a donation. You take this donation from me, one of these beautiful women. Vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the servants of the demigods selected Urvashi, the best of the apsaras. Placing her in front of them out of respect, they returned to the heavenly planets. So I have a little bit here about Urvashi from Bhagavatam. Prabhupada describes her in the first canto, 12th chapter, purport 21. In one sense, Indra is the real father of Arjuna. Therefore, indirectly, he wanted to entertain Arjuna with the famous society girl of heaven, Urvashi, celebrated beauty. The society girls of heaven are lusty, and Urvashi was very eager to contact Arjuna, the strongest human being. She met him in his room and expressed her desires, but Arjuna sustained his unimpeachable character by closing his eyes before Urvashi, addressing her as mother of the Kuru dynasty, and placing her in the category of his mothers, Kunti, Maji, and Sachi Devi, wife of Indra. Disappointed, Urvashi cursed Arjuna and left. So she was the mother of the Kuru dynasty, so therefore he saw her that way, saw her as his mother. In the second canto, she's mentioned, one who desires a good wife should worship Apsaras and Urvashi society girls. And she is the mother of Agastya and Vashishta from Mitra and Varuna. And she is the mother of six sons from Pururava.
From?
Pururava. We'll hear about him. Pururava was her husband. And she had six sons, beginning with Ayu, from Pururava. That is the Soma Vansha, the moon dynasty. So verse 16, the servants of the demigods reached the assembly of Indra. Thus, while all the residents of the three heavens listened, they explained to Indra the supreme power of Narayan. When Indra heard of Narayana Rishi and became aware of his offense, he was both frightened and astonished. The infallible supreme personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has descended into this world by his various partial incarnations, such as Lord Hamsa, the swan, Dattatreya, the four Kumaras, and our own father, the mighty Rishabhdev. So Rishabhdev is the father of the nine Yugendras. Two incarnations, Hamsa and Dattatreya, we will be hearing from them in this canto, in Uddhava Gita. These two incarnations will be there. Dattatreya will be speaking about the 24 gurus, and Lord Hamsa will give instructions in Hamsa Gita to the four Kumaras. Now, these particular incarnations, Hamsa, Dattatreya, and Rishabhdev, are incarnations during the time of Swayambhuva Manu, the first Manu. So I did some research in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, and I found out where these different incarnations, when, the time frame for all these different incarnations. So these incarnations are coming in Swayambhuva Manu's time. By such incarnation, the Lord teaches the science of self-realization for the benefit of the whole universe. In his appearance as Hayagriva, he killed the demon Madhu and thus brought the Vedas back from the hellish planet Patala Loka. So this is all in Swayambhuva Manu's time. It is stated in Skanda Purana, the Lord of the universe, Hari himself, once appeared in the form of a young brahmachari named Kumara and spoke transcendental knowledge to Sanat Kumara. So there's 14 Manus in the day of Brahma, and the sixth Manu is Chakshusha Manu. So in verse 18, we're going to hear about some incarnations of the Chakshusha Manu. In his appearance as a fish, the Lord protected Satyavrat Manu. So Satyavrat became our Manu in the next. There was a devastation, and then he was protected by Matsya, and he became the Manu of our present Manu. He is Vaidyasvata Manu. As a boar, the Lord killed Hiranyaksha, son of Diti, while delivering the earth from the universal waters. As a tortoise, he lifted Mandara mountain on his back so nectar could be churned from the ocean. So these are all incarnations of Chakshusha Manu, the Manu before us. These are all incarnations. Now the next one is different. The Lord saved the crocodile, the surrendered king of the elephants, Gajendra, who is suffering terrible distress from the grips of a crocodile. This one came in the fourth Manu, the incarnation of Hari. So now in verse 19, again, we're in Chakshusha. The Lord also delivered the tiny ascetic sages called Valakilyas when they fell into the water in a cow's hoofprint, and Indra was laughing at them. Indra, Haribo. The Lord then saved Indra when Indra was covered by darkness due to the sinful reaction for killing Vritrasura. When the wives of the demigods were trapped in the palace of the demons without any shelter, the Lord saved them. In his incarnation as Nrsimha, the Lord killed Hiranyakashipu, king of the demons, to free the saintly devotees from fear. So he's also placed in Chakshusha Manu's time, Nrsimha and the other Varaha. There is, of course, there's two Varahas and two Matsyas. But there is a Matsya and Varaha in the Chakshisha millennium. So now we are going to our millennium, Vaivasvata Manu, seventh Manu. The Supreme Lord regularly takes advantage of the wars between the demons and demigods to kill the leaders of the demons. The Lord thus encourages the demigods by protecting the universe through his various incarnations during the reigns of each Manu. The Lord also appeared as Vamana and took the earth away from Bali Maharaj on the plea of begging three steps of land. The Lord then returned the entire world to the sons of Aditi. So Vamana is placed in our particular Manu, and in each Manu there are 72 Chaturyugas, 72 groups of the four Yugas. So according to Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Vamana Dev appeared in the seventh Chaturyuga of our Vaivasvata. We are now in the 28th. Just Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya have appeared, so we're in the 28th. He appeared in the 7th. Lord Parashuram appeared in the family of Bhrigu as a fire that burned to ashes the dynasty of Haihaya. Thus Lord Parashuram rid the earth of all Kshatriyas 21 times. So Parashuram is placed in the 17th or 22nd of this Manu that we're in now. He's relatively recent. The same Lord appeared as Ramchandra, husband of Sita Devi, and thus he killed the ten-headed Ravana, along with all the soldiers of Lanka. May that Sri Ram, whose glories destroy the contamination of the world, be always victorious. So they are glorifying Ram, according to Sridhar Swami. He's contemporary for the nine Yogendras, same time he came. Thus they have offered particular respect to Lord Ramachandra, as indicated by the word Jayati. So when did Lord Ram come, according to Lagu Bhagavatamrita, in the 24th, the Treta Yuga of the 24th Chatur Yuga cycle, he came in that Treta Yuga. So we can actually figure out how long ago this conversation happened. It was in the 24th, that's only like four Yuga cycles away, in Treta Yuga, a few million years ago. Just a few million years, and we are hearing it today, four Chaturyugas before, including a Treta Yuga. So now we are in the present, relatively present, 5,000 years ago, to diminish, but it's future, for them it's future. To diminish the burden of the earth, the unborn Lord will take birth in the Aru dynasty and perform feats impossible even for the demigods. So it's future for them, and it's past for us. Propounding speculative philosophy, Lord as Buddha will bewilder the unworthy performers of Vedic sacrifice, future for them and past for us. And as Kalki, the Lord will kill all the low-class men posing as rulers at the end of the age of Kali. So that is future for us as well. The end of this Chaturyuga cycle, Kalki will appear. This 28th Chaturyuga cycle of the 7th Manu, Kalki will come. O mighty armed king, there are innumerable appearances and activities of the Supreme Lord of the universe similar to those I have already mentioned. In fact, the glories of the Supreme Lord are unlimited. So that's the end of this chapter on the incarnations. The answer to his question, oh, what are the incarnations? And we'll hear more tomorrow. Yuga avatars. We'll hear more. Today's question was the pastimes of the various incarnations. And then two more questions tomorrow. The aim, destination of one who is against the Lord and devoid of bhakti. And then we'll hear about the Yuga avatars, the four Yuga avatars. Any questions or comments? Yes.
There's no mention of Mahaprabhu.
Tomorrow, Yuga avatars. We haven't discussed Yuga avatars. That will be a question.
You also said that there are two
Varaha. Yes, yeah. Yeah. Why is that? Because he wanted to come twice. That's why. Two in this day of Brahma. Yes, there are two in this day. Now, if you go to another day of Brahma, you might find only one, or you might find two. Actually, in Lagu Bhagavatamrita also states the question, some question was asked me, which I didn't know, but now I know, that all these incarnations are kalpa avatars. They appear once. Come in, please. Hare Krishna, welcome. Our Ranga, where is, no, you're from Kumbhakarna?
Yes.
Kumbhakona. Not Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakona. Jai. Yes. Thank you for coming. We're just at the end. That's okay. You come tomorrow, you'll find out what happened today. Yes?
Did you say this Gajendra Mokshana happened not in Chakrusha Avatara?
Yeah, that's what it says. It was in the fourth Manu.
Fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth Manu means...
I forgot his name. I didn't write his name down. Yeah, I don't remember his name. I got excited. I just remembered, oh yeah, right, Laga Bhagavatamrita tells all these things, so we should find it. Laga Bhagavatamrita.
And Hamsa Dattatreya Kumara.
Yeah, all in Swayambhuva, yeah. That's what it said. Hamsa Dattatreya.
Four Kumaras.
And Narada. They were in Swayambhuva. Yeah, it's interesting. Nishinga and it said that Diti was a daughter of, you know, from the second, from Chakshusha, when Daksha again had so many daughters. He had so many daughters, and then Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha came. He was the daughter of Diti. She was, yeah.
So here it says that
Impersonalist. Yeah, he preaches impersonalist philosophy, but of course, Krishna also speaks his philosophy. So when we hear it in Uddhava Gita, if we hear it from Krishna, then you won't. Then you'll be okay. Therefore, you have to hear it from Krishna. But he talked, he preached to Yadu. What did you say? They become atheist? Yeah, you can find that place. But generally, it was he preached impersonal philosophy. It's Jnana Yoga. But in Uddhava Gita, you're going to find a lot of Jnana Yoga. So they're preaching to the Jnanis, but also to the devotees. It's Krishna. Krishna is speaking himself, this Jnana Yoga, just like he spoke in Bhagavad Gita, "You are not this body." So in Uddhava Gita, he's also speaking Jnana Yoga. But the devotees can understand it in a higher sense. And so if you hear it from Krishna, you won't become an atheist. Maybe if you hear it from Dattatreya, you might have a problem. But Yadu didn't become... I mean, he preached to Yadu. Yadu was okay. Haihaya, I think, had some problem, perhaps. He did have a problem. I think he offended the Vaishnavas. But Yadu heard, and he remained a devotee. Yadu dynasty. And that's why he didn't take the curse of his fathers, because he knew that Krishna was going to appear in his dynasty. So therefore, he wanted to have his grihastha life properly, to have Krishna. So Yadu was one of the people who heard the philosophy of Dattatreya. He's Vishnu, incarnation of Vishnu.
Also
Prahlad. Prahlad too. Prahlad also didn't become an atheist, although he's born in demoniac family. Prahlad heard his preaching, and Yadu heard his preaching. But I don't know. Perhaps some people became atheists. I don't know who those people were. Haihaya, he also preached to Haihaya. So Haihaya did something. If I remember from ninth canto, Haihaya was there, and I think he made an offense. Yeah.
So the Parashurama, he appeared in the 27th Chatur Yuga.
22 or 17 or 22? 22nd.
22nd Chatur Yuga.
Yeah, there was they said two different things, 17 or 22.
So it was in which Manu?
Our Manu. The ones that I'm selling, which Chatur Yuga, it's our Manu, Vaidusvata Manu. Present.
So in two Chatur Yugas.
Right, and everybody, all Manu's time, there is 72
and a half.
Yes, because they're living, they're speaking in the 24th Yuga, the time of Lord Ram. 24th Chatur Yuga. The time of Lord Ram, they're speaking. Krishna has not yet appeared.
Is the time of Lord Ramachandra's...
Yeah, they are living at the same time as Lord Ramachandra's parents.
But Lord Ramachandra appeared on 24th
Chatur Yuga. Right.
24th.
Right, that's what...
Lagu
Bhagavatamrita says. Chaitya Yuga of the 24th. And they all come once in a day of Brahma, according to Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Now, what was your question? I forgot. Yeah. Oh, yeah, about the atheist. Yeah, you have to find that place. It could be in the first canto. He mentions Dattatreya in the list of incarnation, I think, in first canto, yeah? What does he say there? You have it. You can find it on your computer. 1, 3...
The philosophy of the spirit soul, and especially instructed Alaka, Prahlada, Yadu, Haihaya, etc.
He expounded philosophy of the spirit soul. But he didn't. It doesn't say about atheists.
No, atheists, I can't find it.
No, I don't think so.
Good if you can find it.
If you can find that quote, then we can talk about it. We can see. He says, impersonalist perhaps, because it does. He just talked about I am the spirit soul. But you're going to find a lot of jnana in the Uddhava Gita. A lot of jnana also. So he begins, just like he begins Bhagavad Gita with chapter 2. So he begins Uddhava Gita with the 24 gurus, which are also like jnana. It's impersonal. We're seeing the Lord in nature. We're seeing the qualities of the Lord. We're seeing qualities in nature, which can remind us of the devotees and remind us of the Lord, good qualities. We're just seeing good qualities. Of course, when you hear the commentaries, then you can understand how it's connected to Krishna. It's very connected. Very interesting. Yes?
In the second canto, Prabhupada writes that by the grace of Dattatreya Haihaya achieved both material blessings and devotional service.
Okay.
Pure devotional service, but then by offenses.
Yeah, by offenses.
He was killed by Parashram.
Yeah, he was involved in the killing of his father, I believe, Jamadagni.
Seventh canto, which chapter? 7-4.
Yeah, this. So devotional service, Dattatreya. He's Vishnu. He preached devotional service to Yadu, Prahlad. Yeah. Yes.
And this, 19 verse.
Which verse?
19.
Yeah, they are in. When you read, it's in 12th canto. That they are in front of the chariot of the sun god, and they're offering prayers. And they're also in Mahabharata. I can't remember exact story about them, but they're in Mahabharata as well. But definitely in Bhagavatam, they are there at the end, that they are facing the sun god's chariot and offering prayers as the sun travels to the sky.
Was it
Vindas? No, the sages, Valakilyas. Valakilyas.
They are
60,000. Well, they drowned. They were drowning in a calf's hoofprint water. So. Yeah. So they're pretty small. It's, we take the literal translation that they were. They're very small.
Depends the size of the cow.
Right. Anyway, Haribo. Yes.
In relation to the second verse.
Second verse.
You said that for each of us, the Lord manifests the unique qualities of
Sanatana Goswami.
That's Sanatana Goswami.
10:14:7 purport. I didn't say that. Sanatana Goswami says that. It's one of my favorite purports.
10:14:7 was in the
Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th. It's the prayers of Lord Brahma. He says the same thing, that if someone were able to count all the molecules of snow, the molecule particles of sunlight, or the molecules on this earth, then he cannot count the qualities of the Lord. Then the purport, Sanatana Goswami says that for each of the living entity, the Lord manifests a particular quality. Therefore, he has innumerable qualities. 10:14:7. Purport. Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful idea. Krishna has a quality just for you. A special one that will attract you. Only. So we each have our individual relationship with Krishna, and Krishna is also individual with us. And that's the wonderful thing. Yes. Any other questions or comments? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll hear tomorrow about Lord Chaitanya in the Yuga Avatar section. We only heard the Guna Avatars, Leela Avatar. We didn't hear about the Purusha Avatar. We heard tomorrow will be Yuga Avatars. Haribol. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.